Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Well, I just came back from four exciting days at the Entrepreneurship Conference in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I was a guest of Terry Powell's, and I was just blown away at the energy of such a great event. You know, a lot of people don't realize that their trade show of franchise brands is the largest in the United States that is not open to the public. Really a lot of energy. Thank you again, Terry, Lori, and the entire Entrepreneurs team. It was really a great honor and very energizing to be part of your conference. I thank you. Upcoming events, of course, is some that I'm definitely looking forward to. The Leadership and Development Conference coming up in Atlanta, October 9th through 11th. Our friends and strategic partners at Franchise Update Media Group, of course, produced the event, and I'll be broadcasting live from the event next Thursday. And then, of course, we'll be heading to the West Coast Franchise Expo, October 24th through 26th. On Friday of that event, on the 24th, I will be speaking with Lee Plave in a symposium sponsored by Plave Cook, and it will be on social media and its role within franchising. And then from there is the Restaurant Finance and Development Conference, November 4th through 6th in Las Vegas, from our friends at Franchise Times. Followed by the Franchise Brokers Association Conference and Expo, November 11th through 13th. That's in Orlando. I will be there, and I will be quite active at that event. And then, of course, we'll be heading to Atlanta for the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame event on November 16th. And I'm going to kind of hold back a second because I want to introduce today's special guest, Mitch Slemmer. Mitch has been featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Newsday, Success Magazine, on CNN and other media venues during the last 30 years. Many are not aware he was also voted one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America by his peers, and that's from more than 4,500 radio hosts that were in the running. And due to that great radio show success, the Let's Talk Business Network was born, and now nearly 20 years later, Mitch continues fulfilling his mission of providing a voice for entrepreneurs, which included the relaunching and airing of Let's Talk Business back in March 2011. Chairman and CEO of the Let's Talk Business Network, Mitch felt there really should be a place that would both recognize the great entrepreneurs from around the world and provide an educational vehicle for the nation's youth to learn from these great entrepreneurial journeys. And with this, 10 years ago, Mitch founded the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. Started out as an internet-based venue, but Mitch's vision was to create and build a physical facility and museum similar to existing halls of fame, like the Baseball Hall of Fame. And Mitch made that dream come true, starting out working from offices in both Long Island and downtown Atlanta. Eventually, Atlanta became the home of the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. Mitch is focused on making this great building an epicenter for entrepreneurship, philanthropy, and innovation, especially for the youth of the world. And I am honored to welcome Mitch to Franchise Today. Mitch, welcome.
That's great to be with you, Paul. It's interesting when you hear someone introduce you. As you know, I've been on the radio 20 years, and I'm typically on the other side, and It's nice to be with you, and I feel honored as well.
You know, it's such an illustrious career, but I think just like a lot of the great minds in the world, the Steve Jobs types of the world that truly focus on the passion to get to where they want to be, to achieve their goals and objectives in a specific trek, if you would, so to speak, in your career, obviously, was always focused on small business, franchising. I know you had a TV show a lot of people aren't aware of, Franchising Today, which, of course, no direct correlation to Franchise Today. Wasn't aware that you actually had that show, but I was quite interested in that, in learning that you had that show at a time probably when franchising really could use exposure. And then, of course, you know, about entrepreneurship and your commitment over a relatively long period of time of really showcasing entrepreneurship. And, you know, to that end, let's talk about, we'll start right with the pinnacle, the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. Please give us, you know, some of your thoughts and perspective of how this has all evolved and where we are today with it.
I think the big thing, Paul, is, you know, lots of times, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, even get labeled, you know, as visionaries. You know, they kind of see things and they don't know why they haven't been done, and it's very obvious to them, but maybe not obvious to other people. And until it happens, then everyone says, "Oh my God, you know, I didn't realize, you know, that that this didn't exist, or why didn't I think of that, or oh, that's what he was thinking." And you know, the long and short of it is when you know my journey, which you've talked about. I am an entrepreneur. It's in my DNA. It's all I've ever done. I've never worked for anyone, and I know the plight of what I like to call this beast very well. And you know, the highs and the lows, and many times even the isolation and loneliness that goes with it. And you know, here I was building my sixth business, a support community for entrepreneurs, called the Let's Talk Business Network, which you mentioned. And I never understood why we didn't have a voice for entrepreneurship. So lo and behold, I went on a 50,000-watt radio station 20 years ago and started Let's Talk Business, and it went national after 6 months, and here I am still on the air today. But while this was going on, I went to a bunch of halls of fames, you know, baseball and football, and in Springfield was basketball. And, you know, at that time we didn't have Google, but if we did have Google – and obviously we have these search engines today. If you put in Hall of Fames, you know, you would see hundreds of them from, and some pretty obscure, Paul, from fly fishing to, ready for this one, quilting, and, you know, so on and so forth. And then there's all the ones everyone knows, as I kind of just mentioned, baseball, football, hockey, tennis, rock and roll Hall of Fame, and the list goes on and on. And there, lo and behold, there never was an Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. So like the radio show, I said, well, why not I? And I made the decision to pursue this vision and dream. And I started it actually online. Anyone who's ever built anything, forget about an idea like this or a vision like this. The truth is that you have to, you can't dabble. And here I am, the chairman and CEO, driving the Let's Talk Business Network. And I was not in a position to focus my life's work on building a true Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. So each year, myself and I got together with some other people, and we thought of who would be good inductees, and we started inducting people online every year. But it was always, always the vision, the belief, the dream of building a true Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame, and I was blessed about 4 years ago to get in a position to focus the rest of my life on this Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. So I started visiting different cities and meeting with different dignitaries and, you know, and so on and so forth. And the people in Atlanta just, you know, love the idea of an Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame and were very much aggressive and wanted us there, along with some really exciting other projects that they had there. And they thought this would be another wonderful attraction, especially in a state that really wants to be like the state for entrepreneurship. So when you spend any time in Atlanta, you would see that the College Football Hall of Fame is moving, is being built in Atlanta. You'd actually see right next door to the Koch Museum in Centennial Park, the National Center for Civil Human Rights being built. So when I settled in here, it became also clear to me now that the heavy, you know, due diligence, the homework, the planning is going, is that there was actually a much bigger need, and that was for an epicenter for entrepreneurship, a center that would illuminate the past, would empower the present, and would inspire the future. And one part of this epicenter would be the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. So little by little, it's becoming much more of a reality. We have a long way to go, but we have about 1,500 square feet in the Marquee One Tower here in downtown Atlanta. Anyone can come in. Thousands of people come by us on a daily basis, and they will see some of the great entrepreneurs. But those are our corporate offices, as we're working on, you know, the big dream, you know, meeting with developers and looking at buildings and putting all the, you know, the starting to put all the plans together for, you know, a serious capital raise. You know, these are not small ideas, and but I believe in the end, much needed. And I think that's at the heart of being an entrepreneur, is she or he eventually sees a need and says, you know, oh, my God, you know, why isn't this being done? And when you look at the plight of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship over the last 10 or 20 years, it has become obviously very popular and very large. You know, 35 years ago, you know, entrepreneurs were considered a kook, you know, and not only were you crazy, but, you know, more importantly, you know, most people couldn't even spell the word entrepreneur. So,
right.
But here we are 35 years later. The Epicenter is alive and well in downtown Atlanta, and within it is the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. And we've got two great events coming up in the next month or so that I'm really excited about, especially based on last year's class of 2012, which was a true physical event, no different than your listeners might have seen if they watched the induction for, say, football or baseball. As we know, this year there actually were no inductees into the Baseball Hall of Fame. But these are special nights with so many wonderful people there, especially in the franchising world. And they were there to honor and learn from and meet some of the greatest entrepreneurs of our time. Last year, our inductees included 92-year-young Truett Cathy, founder of Chick-fil-A, Sarah Blakely, who at 40 was the youngest female billionaire, the woman behind a great idea in business called Spanx. And there were many others as well. We honored the late Don Dwyer, who we all know in the franchising world, and his obviously accomplishments, but more importantly, what he's done in the franchising world, including starting VetFran. And we were lucky to have Dina Dwyer Owens, the CEO of the Dwyer Group, do his induction, and Doug came, and Dina's daughter came, and it was special. And then we also had come back Fred DeLuca, the founder of Subway, which today, as we know, has over 40,000 outlets worldwide. And in the audience, you know, were people that are friends of ours, and I know who you were with that, you know, have been an integral part of this dream and vision, especially Jerry Darnell. But there are plenty others there as well. Stan Friedman was there, and Rhonda Sanderson was there, and David McKinnon was there, and I can go on and on. And so this year we're looking forward to having you as well.
I look forward to being there, without a doubt. I was with Stan and Jerry, amongst a bunch of other franchise professionals at the Entrepreneur Source Conference, and we had quite a few conversations about the upcoming event, the entire Epicenter Week, culminating in the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. And 2 weeks ago, we had Dina Dwyer Owens back on the show. I imagine someday we'll see her being inducted as well. You know, it's really remarkable, the journey of entrepreneurship. As you said, you know, years ago, you were considered a kook if you were an entrepreneur. And, of course, back then, you know, the big term in business was, you know, are you a businessman? You know, we saw everybody in the dark suits and the white shirts and ties. And entrepreneurship has just blossomed. And, you know, recently when Steve Jobs had passed away, his co-founder at Apple, Steve Wozniak, was asked, do you think there'll ever be an individual like Steve Jobs? And I'll paraphrase here. Wozniak took a moment and he thought and he said, you know, typically I would have said, no, there'll never be another Steve Jobs, he said, but in light of the current economic uncertainty of the nation and the business environment, not only will I say there'll be another Steve Jobs, but there'll be many like him, as well as the Bill Gates and other entrepreneurs of the world, because there's so much young unemployed, underemployed talent that's out there, that it's just going to blossom as far as the next wave of visionaries, the next wave of entrepreneurs. And I know you are really focused on the epicenter being for the studying and teaching of entrepreneurship, especially to our youth. So share with us some of your perspective on entrepreneurship and how it relates to the youth of today.
Well, I think, you know, it's really interesting when you talk about Steve Jobs and obviously Wozniak and what, you know, Wozniak said, and as you paraphrased him. But what's fascinating, you know, at one time, Paul, you know, around the number, you know, there were 300 million Americans, you know, and a lot of the great entrepreneurs, obviously, and they all saw needs and created businesses that affected our lives forever, you know, were driving forces. But then all of a sudden, you know, this thing started to take hold. And the reason that I bring it up, and then I'll answer your question, is that now the 7 billion people in the world, and it really is, as we know, a global economy, but entrepreneurship all over the world is booming, is exploding. So it's not only just the next Steve Jobs, you know, it could be the next Sony or you know, who's behind that, or Mitsubishi, or Toyota, or whatever. And that's my prediction, is that we're going to see plenty of companies come from outside the world. They're going to affect the way we live and the way we communicate. So, but entrepreneurship, you know, has been a movement, especially for our youth, for the better part of the last, you know, 10 to 20 years. One of the forerunners is NIFTY, founded by Steve Mariotti, who was actually given a special award last year at our event. And they've taught entrepreneurship to over 500,000 kids around the world. And then there's another group out of Atlanta, actually, and I know them very well. I'm involved with them, which is the Magic Wand Foundation. And they are teaching entrepreneurship and teaching kids the seven mindsets to live their ultimate lives. And, you know, they're helping kids. And then, you know, there's all kinds of other things. There was just the launching of Youth Entrepreneurs Georgia, and Georgia Pacific is very involved in that. Curly and Scott and Jay Catherine and even all the way up to Jim Hannon, its CEO. And so I'm just rattling off a few organizations that are providing and helping entrepreneurs. There's actually a new group and a new place in College Park, Georgia, not Maryland, called Club E, and they're teaching entrepreneurship and programs to kids. So I rattled off all of these resources for one reason, and that is to point out that entrepreneurship, especially for our young, is live and well. And, you know, their choice, when you ask these kids how many of them would like to run your own business one day, and I'm going back now well over a decade, you know, if you had a room full of 100 kids, it wasn't uncommon for 80 kids in that room to raise their hand, and they get it. And as you alluded to, which is no small factor, I'm just going to paraphrase you, there was a day and age that, you know, you went out of, you know, you got out of college, you know, you went to college, and you got out of college, and there was a trade show or a few shows at your college, and there were recruiters there, and, you know, there'd be some guy from a woman from IBM, and, you know, you'd get hired, and you'd go buy a bunch of red ties and some white shirts and some dark suits, and 35 or 40 years later, you know, there was the opportunity to get a dinner and maybe a nice watch or a nice pen. But that's exploded. You know, it's virtually almost non-existent. I think we all know the facts that they say that an individual, a human being in their lifetime will have five different careers, not even five different jobs. But there's no more security. And anyone who's in corporate America on the whole will tell you that, including the fact that many are doing the job of two and three just to keep their jobs. So you eventually reach a point where, like never before, people are looking at the alternatives, and, you know, I don't want to use the word of being forced into entrepreneurship, but they're definitely all these forces are there that people have said, you know what, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And when they look at, you know, different methods of going into business, you know, there's really three ways. One is the one we've started off on, and that is being an individual that sees a need and feels like they can fill it regardless of what that is, and they start from scratch, the most treacherous. You know, the failure rates are extremely high. And then there is near and dear to both our hearts in the name of your show Franchise Today, franchising, which, as we both know, you know, accounts for over 50% of all retail sales and over $2 trillion. And by the way, you know, is a very good way of going into business, so definitely safer than starting from scratch. And then there's the third one that never normally gets a lot of traction, and that is buying a business. And I did a lot of consulting work at one time with VR Brokers, including with its original founder, which was George Native. And I learned a lot inside that place. And one of it is that 90% of all businesses at that time that are sold are owner financed. So think about that. Business is doing $1 million in revenues. The person behind the business wants to get out, whether it's a divorce, doesn't feel like the kids could run the business, doesn't want them to run the business. The kids don't want to run the business. They don't have kids. And, you know, they might have some health issues, or they just had enough and they want to get out. You know, let's say that they agreed to a sale price of $1 million. So 10% down, it's $100,000, and the owner takes the back paper, $900,000, and finances it. But if you're a good business person, you might bring all kinds of things into that business that's only doing $1 million, and you might get it to 5 or 10 or 15 million. It might be something as simple as you bring all these technologies to the business where, you know, what this person is still, you know, doing accounting with green sheets and whatever, and you go in there and start using Excel and create a website and, you know, and SEO and whatever, and lo and behold, you've built the business. So entrepreneurship is here to stay, and it's alive and well, and as I started this off, it's alive and well globally. And truth be told, you know, one of the real challenges for entrepreneurs, and that's why the Epicenter was created, is really to attack an issue. And it's an issue that Paul doesn't get a lot of press, and that is, you know, when you think of causes, let's for a minute, let's just take age. You know, when Bono creates Red, and his obviously his voice, pardon the pun, brings attention to this, they raise millions and millions of dollars, and they start attacking, you know, all these deaths by AIDS, and, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates, you know, eventually Melinda gets Bill to, you know, loosen up the money a little and says, hey, you know, I got billions and billions, let's do something with this, and they create the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they start attacking AIDS as well, and malaria, and education, and you know, we could spend the rest of this interview on causes that everyone knows that brings in a lot of money. But here we are, and that is the backbone of the American economy, our entrepreneurs, our small business owners. And the truth of the matter is from the first day I am an entrepreneur, I recognize that today, which is 35 years later, there's a statistic that pretty much is still the same, and that is about 70% of all businesses fail. Many times I use the word die after 2 years or so. And then after 5 years of that 30% remaining, another 20% fail or die. So after 5 years, around 10% of all businesses that start are no longer there. And that is totally unacceptable. And no one has really shed a light on this. No one has shed a light on it. No one has attacked it. So you and I both know, based on our backgrounds in the franchising world, that what great entrepreneurs do is they bring organization to fragmented industries. They bring organization to sometimes mom-and-pop industries. One of the analogies that I love to use, who's also being inducted into the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame this year, is the late Tony Martino. Now, anyone that knows Tony well, and I know you know him, and Jerry, and Stan, and so on and so forth, but, you know, here's a guy, you know, that saw a need, and even though he'd started out, was very involved with, you know, I believe Cotman Transmissions, you know, Tony said, here's all of these mom-and-pop transmission places, and what if we could get the economies of scale of buying power and, you know, one roof to advertise and blah, 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 and Anthony A. Martino and company, you know, is AMCO, and he built this really successful business. Well, Tony, being a true entrepreneur, knowing that space well, sees the same need in the auto, you know, painting aftermarket. And he basically brings the same skill set to that, turns his name around, and uh-oh, better get Mikko. Now, why did I use those as two examples? I use those two examples to tell you that I recognize that the entrepreneurial marketplace, especially those that support entrepreneurs, is fragmented. And what if we could go ahead and aggregate this fragmented industry and get us to work together? Now, I'm not foolish enough to think that we're going to get everybody, but my theory is based on that I believe we can get a lot of people to collaborate, to work together in order to help entrepreneurs be more and more successful. And when that happens, when we move that dial, you know, more companies will succeed, more companies will create more jobs, create more taxes, and I think we'll have a tremendous impact on our economy. And lo and behold, it's working. You know, we're still early on. The dial hasn't moved yet, but I can tell you based on the work we're doing here at the Epicenter, little by little, these resources are coming together, and we're going to continue to create events and venues that bring us all together and get us to celebrate not only these great entrepreneurs, but to learn from them and share it with young entrepreneurs so that they can learn from them as well. And that's where the name Epicenter came from, is the place that will, as I mentioned, will illuminate the past, will empower the present, and will inspire the future. And I've never been more excited. And I can tell you, it's a huge challenge. This is not easy, but it's definitely worthwhile.
I got to tell you, Mitch, I could sit here for hours and listen to you talk. I could just feel the passion coming out of you, and it's actually just brings chills to my spine. You know, you mentioned a lot of great things. I mean, first of all, yeah, the days of I like the way you mentioned go out and buy red ties and white shirts, the old power tie back of the 80s, and of course before that, IBM made the starch white shirts a staple of business. And of course, being such a bureaucracy, if you would, and very regimented in their ways, it actually stunts entrepreneurial way of thinking. And I think, as a lot of people talk about, you know, we're in an entrepreneurial economy. Ideas are flourishing. Even people that are getting jobs in corporate America are expected to have an entrepreneurial way of thinking outside the box. Of course, we saw that very much front and center with the entire high-tech booms in the 90s and into the after 2000, and still consider it a big part of that industry segment today. And then you came full circle and brought something, you know, that was actually dear to my heart, which is AMCO. I started out basically in franchising as an AMCO center manager back in the 80s. And their systems, the procedures, the processes that I know Tony Martino inbred into the organization from day one lives with me to this day. I probably could recite the entire AMCO sales track if I had a couple of minutes to gather my thoughts. And it's a lot of those same philosophies, as you said, that he took from AMCO and took over to Mako, and I know some others have copied them. And I could tell you at one point I was in a organization's training program, and they brought out an AMCO sales manual, didn't even take the time to cross AMCO out or plagiarize or anything. They just used the entire manual. And some might look at that as being wrong. I do, but also it's pretty flattering because it was second to none. Their sales training was second to none. Their principles and their processes were second to none, and I still use a lot of them today, you know, 30 years later, and I think that's just something that, you know, when it stands the testament of time, I mean, obviously is quite successful. We're broadcasting live. It's Franchise Today. My guest today is Mitch Slimmer, the chairman and CEO of Let's Talk Business Network and founder of the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame and Epicenter. And Mitch, we talked about the youth of America getting more and more involved in entrepreneurship, and it is finally, I believe, and I say finally, it's nice to see more and more universities having courses and tracks on entrepreneurship. To me, it took way too long. It wasn't many years ago that entrepreneurship wasn't discussed in universities, and certainly franchising wasn't discussed. And it really is sad to say that even a lot of large organizations today really don't get a grasp of what franchising is all about. Now, I know when you mentioned back some years ago, you did a weekly television show on Franchising Today. You have inductees into the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame that have sowed their oats, so to speak, within franchising. So how important, in your estimation and opinion, is franchising to entrepreneurship and vice versa?
I think inherently in your question, Paul, when you look at, you know, the birthing of this franchisor, somewhere along the line, one or two people, maybe more, but typically, you know, one or so, had an idea. And whether it was, you know, to just, you know, originally open up a sub shop, you know, to get you through college, and, you know, they never really thought about 5, 10, or 15, or 5,000, or 40,000. But, you know, they all inherently have in its DNA and its birth an entrepreneur behind it. She or he, you know, whether it's Shelley's son, you know, whether it's, you know, we could go on and on with the list of great, you know, franchisors, whether it's David McKinnon, obviously, with Molly Maids, and David's going to be inducted into the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame this year as well at the Carter Center on November 16th. But so at the heart of it, you've got this individual that's running a business, and whether it's, you know, John Schnatter, you know, Papa John's, you know, starts out with the idea of making pizza in the closet of his father's bar. You know, the late Bill Rosenberg, a lot of people might not know this, but, you know, he started out and his vision was canteen trucks. And, you know, it never ends that each example of them, you know, whether it's the Colonel, you know, whether it's Ray Kroc buying out the McDonald's brothers and so on and so forth. When you look at all these, you know, thousands of franchisors, inherently in the beginning there is an entrepreneur. Now this entrepreneur, she or he decides that they want to grow, that they want to expand. And it's not uncommon, as you know, as well as anyone on this planet, that somewhere along the line someone comes at them and says, hey, man, I'd like to own one of these things. You know, you ever think about opening another or whatever? And you know, this method of expansion or distribution is wonderful for entrepreneurs because you get two key ingredients, and as we know, they're the key metrics to why it works. This is the majority of all the capital put up is put up by this franchisee, and they put up all, you know, virtually all the sweat equity, and in return for all that, they get a lot of deliverables from that franchisor. So, you know, in the end, you know, this method of distribution franchising is a perfect way for entrepreneurs to expand their business and many times get, you know, massive, you know, national and international expansion versus, you know, going, you know, completely the company-owned route, which you see that happen now and then, but eventually many times even the Starbuckses of the world eventually realize that franchising has its place, especially internationally. So, I think I've answered your question. I think all of them are driven by entrepreneurs with a dream and a vision, and they have come upon a method of expansion that works for them well, especially others putting up all the sweat equity and the majority of their own capital.
Sure. So let me ask you the billion-dollar question here. How does someone know if they have entrepreneurial DNA?
You know, it's a great question, and as I mentioned to you, and you mentioned in my introduction, I've been on the air for 20 years. Even I don't believe that, and I've been blessed to interview some of the greatest entrepreneurs that have ever lived. And one question that I ask inherently now and then is it nature and nurture, or entrepreneurs are born or are they made? And, you know, you get various answers, and, oh, by the way, which you alluded to, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of schools not only teaching entrepreneurship or various courses, you know, we'll call it in the entrepreneurial space, but, you know, you can get degrees in them, you know. Every year, and I'm going back the last 10-plus years, you know, these magazines, you know, way back when, Success Magazine, and then would list, you know, the top schools, and Babson, you know, would virtually win every year. I mean, I'm almost sure you can actually get your master's degree in entrepreneurship from Babson. But there's hundreds of schools out there that you can not only learn the different disciplines of entrepreneurship, but you can get a degree in it. So for your billion-dollar question, it's one that I've been asking for a long time. Personally, I believe that real entrepreneurs, the beast, the you know, the Dave Thomases from Wendy's, the Dave Anderson from, Famous Dave's Barbecue, and I can rattle off all kinds of names, Harris Rosen from Rosen Resorts, and Fred DeLuca and David McKinnon. You spend time with any of them, and eventually you would realize a few things. One is they didn't take any of these courses, but more importantly, there's something really unique about them, and I think that's kind of why I kind of call them the beast. You know, they're very driven, they're very passionate, they're very persistent. They don't sleep much. A lot of them inherently have a, you know, common denominator of some form of ADD. Many of them that I've met also over the years are quite dyslexic. And this is public knowledge. But Paul Orfila, the founder of Kinko's, Sir Richard Branson, these are all people that I've interviewed. And you spend any time with them, immediately you see they're very different. And one of the things you also see, Paul, that I've also found fascinating, is that the psychographic of them are very different than the small business owner. What am I saying? I'm saying to you, if there's 22 million small business owners, the small business owner has a different mindset. You know, they're very much about that, you know, we'll call it that one grocery store or that one barbershop or that one salon. And as I always say to people, one is not better than the next. But what I am clear on is they're very different. And if you ever get in a room with entrepreneurs, the real beast, or even in a room full of small business owners, and you got one or two of the beasts in there, real entrepreneurs, it's not hard to pick them out if you know them. So, you know, from my vantage point, I think inherently when you look and backtrack and re-engineer all of the great, great entrepreneurs, you would eventually see that they have some special DNA, some special things in their genes, and I think to a large extent they're born. I do believe in every bone in my body that you can teach all kinds of disciplines necessary to build and run a successful business, and therefore with that, successful companies eventually, you know, will come to market. But it is fascinating if you look at Michael Dell leaving, you know, University of Texas, and you look at Zuckerberg, you know, leaving Harvard, and you look at Gates leaving Harvard, and, you know, how long do we need to keep going on and on and on? And we look at Edison and all these people, you would see that virtually very few of them have degrees. So
right.
Forget about degrees in entrepreneurship. But it is a billion-dollar question. It's one that I have no doubt if we were on CNN and Wolf Blitzer had three other people and two of them from academia, I think they would try to make a strong case for how it is being taught. But I'll let the facts speak for themselves.
You know, I like what you said, too, about, you know, certain disciplines can be taught. And I think on the entrepreneurial side also, it's the willingness and the passion to continue learning. And I'll bring up a specific point. The first time that I met Fred DeLuca was 4 or 5 years ago at the IFA annual convention. It was in San Antonio, Texas, and it was the first year that several of us did a tweet-up, which was basically some people that were connected on Twitter, which, of course, was fairly new at the time, got together at one of the hotels at the bar to meet in person because, obviously, we had been meeting online in the Twitter sphere, so to speak. And who shows up? Fred DeLuca. And Fred, now, of course, no reason except passion to want to get involved in something like Twitter and understand it. I mean, the man has, as you said, you know, 40,000 locations. He's an icon. He's achieved tremendous success. But here was a man that was passionate to learn about new technology and actually sat there with his, you know, his smartphone and was trying to learn how to tweet. And I just thought that was absolutely remarkable. To me, the passion that he exuded to learn and continues to want to learn about new technology, certainly at a time in his life where he could basically do whatever he wants to do and certainly doesn't need to do this, took out the time, put all the phobias aside, all the excuses that a lot of people of our age, you know, put in the way and wants to continue to learn. I think that's just, you know, again, exemplifies more of that entrepreneurial spirit.
I think the other thing, too, is you see that they, a lot of them want to help, and they want to help other people, and eventually they're just people. I still remember it being December 2nd, 2012, so it's the day after the class of 2013 induction event, and as I said, Fred was there, and Sarah was there, and Truett was there, and Dean O'Dwyer Owens was there. And, oh, by the way, one of the things that we also do that night that you will see, it's a celebration of entrepreneurship that night, and we give special awards to people that should be recognized for what they're doing for in the entrepreneurial world, and they just don't have to be people that, you know, are in the Hall of Fame. So last year, you know, we gave out a special award to, you know, someone who's very involved in helping vets and is a vet, you know, and is a wonderful guy, and, you know, the award went to Ray Margiano of Foot Solutions. Well, Mary Kennedy Thompson is going to be getting this year's award, and there were plenty of other awards given out last year as well for youth entrepreneurship and so on and so forth. But why did I bring them all up is that one of the joys of the night is just literally everyone just sitting, you know, being together. And I brought up that date, December 2nd, because I'm getting emails and calls saying, oh, my God, Mitch, and then here I am with Sarah Blakely. So many of them, you know, it's like Babe Ruth, Henry Aaron, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, they were regular people, you know. They were so nice.
Sure.
And then when you took a look at where the inductees were and sitting at a table, you know, they were signing each other's programs and autographing each other's program. And there was actually a really light moment when Fred actually came up and gave his induction speech and, more importantly, also received his E Award. He pulled out this little card, and it basically was a card for one free chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A, and that Truett Cathy had given him. So it just cracked the house up. Here's a guy that's got 40,000 outlets, and also,
right. Like
Truett is one of the richest people in the world, and they gave him this free card. But I brought it up to bring up the biggest point is that all these people are just people. And they've gotten some, you know, they've made their breaks, but they've gotten some breaks, and they recognize that. And, you know, when you opened up, obviously, with Terry Powell and the Entrepreneur Source, and obviously there's many other businesses, you know, AdvoCoach, and we could go on and on within his brands. But can't you see, you know, especially after the last 30-plus years that Terry has given to the franchising world, can't you see he's that different beast? I mean, you could see it. They're different people.
Yeah, to listen to him speak the last few days was very inspiring. In 2014, they'll be celebrating their 30th anniversary, standing the test of time. It's just fantastic. And I'm glad you mentioned Mary Kennedy Thompson, one of my favorites in franchising. And she'll be my guest on Franchise Today on November 7th, as we'll be talking about veterans and franchising and kind of in honor of the upcoming Veterans Day, and really just great people in franchising. We're so blessed to rub elbows with them, and as you said, they're people, getting to know them, and more and more, even though I've spent 31 years in franchising, I'm still getting to know more and more people. And of course, the longer you hang around Jerry Darnell, who in my mind is the encyclopedia of franchising professionals. I mean, everybody knows everything about everybody, and it's great to see somebody like Jerry using today's technology to even further that. But more importantly, and this is something I witness firsthand time after time after time being around Jerry, is how he brings young people under his wing and in a very grandfatherly type of way shares with them his wisdom and advice to get them off on the right track. And I think, again, that is also something that epitomizes entrepreneurship, and my hat's off to Jerry for his efforts in doing so as well. And I always look forward to being around Jerry and Stan and a lot of the others that have spent so much time in franchising. And certainly I look forward to attending the event, the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. Tell us a bit, Mitch, about the week leading into the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
Yeah, we've kind of anointed, you know, we're trying to work to get a proclamation, actually, but we'll see. But, you know, if you don't try, you don't get it. So to make the week of November 11th epicenter week, and a week all around, as I keep using our tag, you know, celebrating, you know, illuminating the past, empowering the present, and inspiring the future. And on November 14th, we are working on having our first ever Epicenter Hall of Fame Golf Classic at a beautiful course in Atlanta, TPC Sugarloaf. And little by little, we're getting the players to sign up and so on and so forth. We've never done one before, so, you know, it takes time, you know, to build that kind of momentum. But we're really excited about that. And second of all, that's on the 14th, which is Thursday. And then there's the big, you know, kahuna, you know, November 16th at the Carter Center, the home of obviously President Carter and his libraries and all the great work they do there. It's amazing the work that they've done there and led by him over the decades. But the point I wanted to make was the class of 2013 induction event into the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame, and I alluded to, will also, you know, have some special awards above and beyond being inducted. As we have what I'm going to call a celebration of entrepreneurship, and I'm excited to have so many of our associates and friends and great entrepreneurs, of which many you mentioned and I mentioned today, that are going to be there. It's going to be great to see all of you and to celebrate entrepreneurship together and to enjoy the inductions. And thanks to the support of, you know, the Terry Powells and many others, you know, it's going to be a great event. And it's funny, you know, you mentioned Jerry, and, you know, I'm one of the few people that can say this, and him and I kind of laugh, but, you know, I've known Jerry for the better part of 30 years, and I go way, way, way back. With a matter of fact, you mentioned DeLuca, and he was a client of mine when they were at about 1,000 units. And the reason I mention them only is for one reason, is the greatest part of life, forget about entrepreneurship, forget about franchising, is the people you meet along the way. And, yep. You know, and to see them grow, and as you mentioned, you know, to see Jerry, you know, to me, is, you know, the godfather of franchising, you know, truth be told, he'll help anyone any way he can, and he has been a tremendous asset to the Epicenter of the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. I can never thank him enough for his drive, his passion, and his caring, not only for our mission, but the center and the Hall of Fame, and even myself. He's been a great mentor.
Tell us a bit about, and I certainly couldn't agree more, tell us a bit about, or tell us, you know, who's this year's inductees to the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and one of the things that I'm learning, you know, it's one thing to have plans and ideas, and then you hit the ground, you know, and that's why in football, you know, they have audibles. And,
right.
You know, the same thing this year is actually happening last year, and that is, you know, months and months in advance, we give all the nominees that could be inducted this year this beautiful package, this box that they get, and then I speak with them, and we work to get them inducted. But like a lot of things, they wait for the last month or two to start to really commit. So we're just starting to get, you know, some of our yeses. We've had a few no's at the time, but I can tell you based on last year, those that couldn't come or be inducted this year, it possibly could happen next year. But, for example, David McKinnon, who I'm really excited to have, when you look at Service Brands and all that David has done during his journey, I know that the audience, those that don't know him, are just going to love to learn and hear from him, and he's going to be there. Also, Kay Koplowitz, you know, she's one that, you know, very different than a Steve Jobs or a Irvin Magic Johnson. Kay Koplowitz is known for a lot of things, but none greater than she founded USA Networks. And she runs an organization, a Springboard, that's helping entrepreneurs, especially female entrepreneurs, at a level that most people don't know. But when that night is over, then there's Hubert Humphrey, and he's an individual based in actually in Atlanta that has built a few billion-dollar companies that, you know, if I mention his name, you think about the gentleman, obviously, that ran for president for Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But Hubert's going to be another great one. And, you know, we're waiting to hear back from some of the others still, Ben and Jerry. And the only real no's that we have at this point are really from Arthur Blank and Bernie Marcus. Bernie's in Florida and has been dealing with some health issues. And Arthur has a lot of things going on. But as I mentioned, there's going to be some special awards as well. I'm excited about those, including obviously the Veteran Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame winner in Mary Kennedy Thompson. So it's going to be a great night, and I always believe that one of the keys to be successful in business is to be open. You know, some people call it being honest, and some people call it being vulnerable. And I can tell you that last year, it wasn't within literally the last month even under that I get the final commitment from some of the greatest entrepreneurs in our time. So you never know.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something that I had in my notes too, you know, woman entrepreneurs. Obviously, very much a growing trend, here to stay. And I think as I've talked with various female entrepreneurs over the past 5 years here on Franchise Today and got to know them as well, the Shelley Sons, the Dina Dwyer Owens. And what really exudes from them is the establishment of this culture, of a culture. And I don't think it's any accident when you look at the Dwyer Group and you look at Dina, obviously the organization established by her late dad last year, an inductee into the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. Dina herself, Mary Kennedy Thompson, Mark Lifton, and the list goes on. And I don't think there's many other organizations that have such a high level of the right culture, the right fit in the organization as Dwyer. And, of course, there are others. I mean, you know, Shelley Sun, and her and her husband have established at Brightstar. Stephen Greenbaum, what's been established at Postnet. And, of course, there's so many others, so I'm not – please don't hold it against me for not mentioning it. It's just way too many to mention. But
culture is really critical. And one of the things that you see with Dina and them, just for example, is these people understand that the most important asset in all of their businesses are the people, whether it's within their companies in Waco or it's their franchisees. They get it. And they give back. You know, one of the things about Epicenter, and, you know, you think of the word, you immediately think of, you know, the place, that circle that they always have within an earthquake. But truth be told, it actually has a double meaning. So E stands for entrepreneurship, P stands for philanthropy, and I stands for innovation. And the reason I'm sharing that with you, it is those values that are also part of the critical criteria on who the nominating committee nominates for induction.
Right, absolutely. You know, I often joke, I said, I would actually pay to sit in the audience at a Dwyer Group annual convention just to be able to get some of that culture on me so that I could take to other organizations. It's just truly remarkable.
It's who they are, Paul, which is really critical. You know, you don't fake that stuff. It's their DNA, you know. And you see it works. You know, these people, the majority of them, they would do anything for their leader.
And I think the key here is what you brought out so very succinctly. Is they're people, and they really are people. I mean, they appear bigger than life, but they are people. They're always giving. I know they always stop hundreds of times at any of these events, you know, shaking hands and talking to people and always willing to connect. But then it's even goes beyond that. You know, these icons, so to speak, like yourself, I've had the opportunity of interviewing some of them, and they're always so gracious. They always take the time to take your call within reason. They always drop a thank you note. They always do all those little things that many people think that they don't do. And I think it just comes down to people. It comes down to their DNA, and it really comes down to their great personas. And I'm truly thankful
to be involved
with
they also recognize, Paul, you know, inherently at one time they were where many people that they deal with are. And they don't lose sight of how blessed, this is the majority of them, and blessed and fortunate and even lucky to be where they are. And, you know, they are extremely fortunate. As you and I know, when you amass certain successes but some wealth, you are a blessed human being. You have a very different
mm-hmm.
life than the majority of people that, you know, are, truth be told, you know, one or two paychecks away from, you know, not being able to pay their mortgage. And then, you know, you deal with all these other things. You know, your government shuts down and you don't even have pay. So they don't lose sight of how lucky they really are. And, you know, a real attitude of gratitude. I and myself and others have really studied these great entrepreneurs, and there's many things that they have in common, including some wonderful mindsets. You know, they really believe that everything is possible, and they have an attitude of gratitude, as I said, and they follow their passions, and you know what, they're accountable, and you know, and many of them eventually give back. You know, we call it live to give, but it's really been an honor to be on with you today, and hopefully one day you'll have me back on.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, you mentioned about the attitude of gratitude and their feelings as people, and I think nothing has been shining through better than, you know, franchising, in particular being front and center on these national shows like CBS Undercover Boss. You learn so much about these individuals and realize they put their pants on the same as everybody else, to your point.
I think the other thing, too, in wrapping up here, Paul, is if you notice, there's actually a very common denominator, and that is whether it was male or female, eventually when they sat down and now they've uncovered they're the boss and they're talking to these people and giving them some significant money, almost to the person, there's a lot of tears. And if that doesn't show how real that CEO and that entrepreneur is, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think they had such an easy ride and they were lucky. And as I wrote yesterday on Facebook, you know, luck is when opportunity meets being prepared. These people were prepared, but certainly it wasn't without obstacles along the way. And
they didn't do it alone.
That's
the thing they also know, Paul. They didn't do it alone. You don't build anything great alone. And that's what I tell people all the time here at the Epicenter and Her Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. And you know, hopefully, you know, people like you, and I can go on, and like I said, you know, Terry's been very supportive, and David McKinnon, and Jerry's been incredible, and Stan, and the people at Arc Systems. That's how you do it, you know. If you can't do something that's so needed and at the level you want to do it without other great people.
Absolutely, and certainly Franchise Today wouldn't be here if I was doing it alone. Without individuals like yourself, Mitch, it was my honor to have you as a guest today on Franchise Today, and I look forward to seeing you at the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame event. Thank you.
Me too, my friend, and keep up the great work. You know, 5 years turns into 10 years and hopefully 20 years, because as we both know, when you get off the show, it's the greatest hour of your week many times, because you get to meet a new friend. So thank you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I want to mention to the franchise community, we've got Small Business Saturday coming up by American Express at the latter part of November. You have until October 15th to sign your brand up, but of course we're making progress, and this year we're up to 100 locations or less. If you fall into that category, please get on online with Small Business Saturday. If you don't know how, hit my Facebook page. facebook.com/PaulSegretto. There's some links there. Next Thursday, I'll be live, Leadership and Development Conference. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.